James.
Welcome to the Delling Pod, with me, James Dellingpole, and I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but before we meet him, although I think you can probably guess who it is, let's have a word from one of our sponsors, which can be cut in cunningly by my assistant Andrew.
Sina Crisps. I used to eat loads and loads of crisps in my normie days, and then of course I discovered that they're all cooked in toxic seed oils, and so I pretty much gave up. The people behind Sina have come up with a brilliant idea of cooking crisps not in seed oils, but in coconut oil, so they're actually not harmful to you. And they also taste... good. Was that a good idea to eat my crisps in the middle of the advert? I'm not sure. Anyway, I just want to make something absolutely clear. Just because I'm starting to do crisp adverts doesn't mean I'm about to become the new Gary Lineker. That's a joke that will go completely over the head of non-British viewers, and I envy those who don't know who Gary Lineker is. They're organic, they are not ultra-processed food, no seed oils, and you can find them at www.sinacrisps, that's S for sugar, I-N-A, crisps.com.
Use the code James for 15% off your order.
So, again, I'm not Gary Lineker, and I envy those of you who don't know who Gary Lineker is. I'm advertising crisps, but they are good crisps. They taste good, and they're cooked in coconut oil. So check out Sina Crisps.
Use the code James, J-A-M-E-S, that's me, for 15% off your order. Welcome back to the Delling Pod, Clive Dekar. I always love coming to see you, because every time I come and see you, I mean, apart from it's nice seeing you anyway, the sun always comes out, and we can sit in your lovely, idyllic Cotswolds garden.
Indeed. Yes, we've been lucky that way. You should come more often.
I know. Do you think it's... I've often wondered... whether the reason that they haven't killed me yet is that I'm actually secretly Illuminati, and they're trying to protect their own, because that would explain, for example, why the sun is nice when I come down, because I have
special powers,
the control skills.
Yes, I don't think that's actually the case.
Well, you were being quite depressing. Not long after I arrived, you were talking about something. You said you'd heard rumours that they might be introducing rationing in this country.
That's what I heard. And I mean, it makes sense, because if there's no fuel, the whole thing falls apart. You know, I mean, very horrible man, but Winston Churchill, when he was asked after the Second World War what was the biggest mistake that England made, he said, "We lost food security." And we've lost that ever since.
Well, they lost it. I mean, isn't that the point? if you're a 33rd degree Freemason and a Druid, committed to working for the rulers of the darkness of this world, you're not going to be really... It's not really a mistake. It's a kind of design, isn't it?
Well, precisely.
Yeah, yeah.
Druids aren't necessarily bad. I had a couple of Druid experiences in my life. I got invited by a friend who was a Druid to Stonehenge, the summer solstice. And I had no idea when I arrived they were short on numbers that year. So the first thing that happened is they handed me the Ku Klux Klan pointy hat outfit.
Oh, I'm envious.
Oh, well, no, don't be. So that it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, that solstice, and it was pouring with rain. So I was prepared. I had Wellington boots. I was prepared. What I wasn't prepared for was that the Ku Klux Klan outfit was too short, and the rain came down from the pointy hat and started filling my Wellingtons. So, you know, there we are, trudging around in the fucking rain. Hail to the east, hail to the west. I'm going, I just can't do this anymore. So you're just going, squelch, squelch. And there are loads of press there, you know, taking pictures. So, anyway, that was very disappointing. It wasn't spiritual in the slightest to me. Anyway, then I got invited to Druid Camp. There's a week where the Druids get together and have a big party, so to speak, for a week. And there's sort of lectures and everybody camps, and it was all very nice. And we sort of drove to it, crossing through field after field. So we really were in the middle of farmland, nobody around. And it just got dark by the time we arrived in the car. And we knew we were in the right place because there was a big hillside and it was a light in spirals. They'd taken pitch the day before and poured pitch all over the place, set fire to the pitch. So then as my eyes got used to it, I could see all these, not everybody, but quite a lot of naked people prancing about.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so I'm not about to take my clothes off in public, but anyway, we sort of joined in. It was all very jolly and very nice. And then the ceremony came to a close. And at that very moment, there was one of the loudest screams I've ever heard, ever. And what it was, the very second the ceremony ended, there was a willow tree, and you know, it was a split willow, you know, and so they propagate by dropping, splitting, they outweigh their own ability to hold up a branch, and then that roots and then splits again.
Is that right?
Split willow, yeah. So there was this massive gasp. I mean, the noise was incredible. The not a bang, but a tearing, ripping sound as the tree literally ripped itself in half. It was an incredible noise. Never heard anything like it. Anyway, there was a gasp from everybody. And somebody explained to me, we were sitting all afternoon under that tree.
So that's the noise that willows make when they split.
Yeah.
And it knew how to split. Look, I'm more anti-Winston Churchill than I am Druids. I've got sort of, because one gets mixed reports about Druids, and it's very, very hard to know in this world of misinformation and disinformation and fake history what's true and what is not. So I've got this book, the same book that tells the story about how young Jesus came to Britain with his great uncle Joseph of Arimathea, because he was a great tin trader. And this book posits that after the crucifixion, Mary, mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene and a few other Cleopas disciples came to England, and they found a ready reception, according to this book, because of the druidical traditions which the book contends were inherited from the children of Israel. One of the 12 tribes came to England, settled it, and these became the Druids who were, again, according to this book, monotheistic and yada, yada, yada. And then, on the other hand, you get the Roman version of the Druids, which is they're evil, they practiced blood sacrifices and stuff. So I don't know. I don't know where I am on the...
Well, my view used to be, when I liked Asterix and Obelix comics, that Getafix the Druid was the real thing.
Well, he was quite cool.
Well, yeah, but
was quite
actually,
cool. Getafix was like you. That's why you.
Well, yeah, that's why I like
him. Yeah, you became Getafix, which actually brings me segues neatly into, as always, when I come down to see you, Clive, I come with a range of ailments.
Mm.
We haven't talked about piles, or did we talk about them last time? We've got.
Well, the thing is, piles generally occur if you're straining, when you have a poo.
No, I'm not straining.
Okay, all right then.
It should be random, gratuitous piles.
I see.
Yeah, no constipation, no problem that way.
Right, okay.
Just itchy ass in the middle of the night.
Okay, itchy ass can be parasites.
Yeah, I did think about this.
It's one of the big signs of parasites.
Maybe it's that then.
Could be. I mean, you know, if you're around horses, just conceivably.
No, I don't go.
You don't want to go that way.
They're dangerous, Clive.
They're
really dangerous.
But, you know, if you're keeping animals, then there's an increased likelihood that you might get some parasites.
No, I am actually, I know I've got loads of parasites because I had my latest mouth swab test.
Right.
Yeah, I've definitely got.
So easy ways to deal with parasites. A whole number of different ways. The thing is that before you start wanting to get rid of the parasites, you've got to make sure that your elimination pathways are capable of dealing with the debris of dead parasites.
That's right. I've had this problem in the past. I once did the turpentine.
Turpentine.
Which is great, but you're not meant to do it until you've got your pathways clear first. Is that right?
Yeah. You want, you know, if turpentine is the remedy of choice, then the pine tree from which turpentine is the natural extraction is the possibly the most healing tree that exists. You can use almost every part of it. It's incredible. Pine pollen, incredible for balancing hormones. You know, both men and women, you got too little of one, too much of another, balancing. Then there's pine pollen tincture, which it has something called suramin in it, and supposedly the research seems to indicate that spike protein damage can be neutralized with pine needle and spruce tips. So then your turpentine is the famous remedy that slaves discovered in America, because they had no money, obviously. They couldn't buy anything, so they had to make their own remedies. And they found that by making turpentine, that it was, you know, perhaps for them the most healing thing they had.
With the stress, we're not talking about terps that you buy from your oil painting shop. It's special. What is it called?
Well, there are two types of turpentine. There's genuine turpentine, and you can tell that because it will say 100% pure gum spirits. Then there's artificial turpentine, terp substitute. Now, the reason you can still get real turpentine from an art shop is that if you're an oil painter, you have to use the real thing. The synthetic stuff doesn't work. So, and there are companies who specialize in the type of material that they say is safe to take internally. But if it is 100% pure and it's gum spirits, then there's no reason in theory why it shouldn't be that. 100% pure, therefore edible, as has been done for centuries.
Yeah.
However, you can get it wrong.
I've experienced this before. If you try and do a parasite cleanse and you do it for too short a time, for example, what you get is it comes back tenfold. I mean, is it just like...
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, you've got the larval stage, the egg stage, the larval stage, and the adult stage. So it may be, depending on what the parasite is, 60 days or something. So you've got to make sure you got rid of the eggs.
Yeah.
And so you might feel better for a bit, because you've got rid of the adults and the juveniles, but then the eggs come out and then it comes back. So, yeah.
60 days, that sounds like a long
well,
life.
Well, you know, again, every body is different and there are loads of different parasites. I mean, sometimes, for instance, it can be easy. There are certain things where the worms just leave because they can't handle it. But you've still possibly got the eggs left behind. I mean, the traditional way was bitter herbs. You know, in old-fashioned times, really pretty much around the world, once a year, you would deworm the animals and deworm the family. And bitter herbs were what we used. For instance, and the clue is in the name, wormwood.
Right, yes.
So wormwood does some of the stuff. Then another famous one is black walnut. You get black walnut as a tincture or capsules. And then the third one is cloves. So those three together can overcome the majority of unwanted guests that are in your system. But you have to do it religiously for a set length of time.
Yeah.
Because you have to just decimate them, basically. And at the same time, you want to make sure that you've got whatever nutrients, be it through food or supplements, to make sure that where they've left, it's now too unfriendly for them to reoccupy. I mean, for instance, there are many parasites that really like it when you're running acidic. So there are parasites that control people's brains in some cases, which will say to the body, eat more sugar, eat more refined foods, because that's super easy for them to digest and they love it, you know. So there's a reason why you got parasites in the first place. And, you know, as we were talking about a little earlier before we started, there are only three reasons why anybody gets ill when it really comes down to it. There's physical stress. You've been attacked by parasites. you've hurt yourself. Chemical stress, where you've eaten something, breathed something, made the mistake of drinking tap water or something without filtering it. Then there's, so it's physical stress, chemical stress, and emotional stress. You know, you had a trauma as a child, something terrible happened, and you've never got over it. So the physical stress that is parasites might also be chemical stress, because parasites not only often eat the nutrients that you want, but also shit it out the other end.
Yeah.
So what are the ways to get rid of parasites? Well, I believe that the... I think it's the World Health Organization who I think say that malaria is actually the most widespread disease around. And that's a blood-borne parasite, right? So how would you deal with that? Well, you could get a powerful frequency device, like the Tesla device, which penetrates deep into the skin. And you could put it here where the veins and arteries are easily accessible. And if you did that for a few minutes, because the blood flows round and round, if you hit the right frequency, or the right frequencies, plural, you could probably wipe out malaria.
Have you done that?
I've never had malaria, and I've never met anybody who's had it when they've come to me.
Oh, that's
but there's masses of research. I mean, this has been known for 130 years, right? It's not new. I mean, other malaria cures, methylene blue. Yeah, methylene blue, which is, super popular in the last couple of years for boosting your neurology, you know, getting your brain to work better. And people who've got neurological issues, often they find, sometimes in a day, sometimes a week, sometimes maybe a month, that actually methylene blue, which again has been around for over 130 years, is quite incredible. And it was the major anti-malarial or malarial cure, I don't know, 120 years ago or something?
I suppose I've got a slight Christian bias in my worldview, which I know is not totally one you share. God gave us all these natural remedies in plants and things, and then the descendants of the fallen angels tried to create a simulacrum of God's creation, a sort of bastard version of it, and ended up with pharmaceuticals and all these kind of synthetics. And so I suppose I'm thinking methylene blue, there's not a kind of methylene blue tree that
no, it's synthetic.
Yeah.
I mean, unashamedly synthetic. However, there are certain synthetics that are great. It may be that if you could somehow get methylene blue from a plant, that would be the whole plant and better, but that's not how it's made. I believe I'm right in saying that hydroxychloroquine is made from methylene blue.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So, you know, there are a few drugs, for want of a better word, synthetic pharmaceutical drugs, that seem to be very effective, where actually every pharmaceutical can have some sort of downside somewhere. But it does seem with some, I mean, some of the nootropics might be a good example of that, where actually, you know, some of these brain-boosting supplements, I wouldn't recommend doing it for life or anything like that, but for short periods of time, proven for 40, 50 years to work. I mean, Army and Air Force types, you know, they got to go on a mission where they cannot sleep.
Yeah.
You know, they'll give them whichever nootropic they choose or stack of nootropics, and they can be fully functional for several days on the go. Now, obviously, that's not a good thing, but let's say you were to use one of those in a very sensible way, cautiously and cleverly with knowledge, you know, things like methylene blue can be fantastically useful, particularly if somebody's losing their marbles.
Right, yeah. Well, there's been a kind of war about this, and you've been fighting this war recently. I mean, there was Medicine Girl.
Yes.
Has been posting I've only come across Medicine Girl through her associate, Agent 13711 or whatever it is. I always forget the numbers. Who's a very, very, very readable presence on Substack. But he's clearly, perhaps under the influence of Medicine Girls, is on a complete downer about all medicines. And I tell you what raised my, because they're very plausible, these pieces, and they're very, you know, lots of detail. What concerned me was when she started having a go at castor oil. And I was thinking, well, hang on a second, you're endangering your credibility here, because I know from, I mean, let's talk about castor oil before we all do that. Castor oil is brilliant, isn't it?
It is brilliant. Let's just go back to Medicine Girl.
Okay.
Because she went from being unknown to suddenly all over the place.
Yeah.
Now,
in the awake community, as it were. So she's targeted.
She's targeting people who perhaps maybe haven't been completely convinced that natural is better. Anyway, when somebody brought it to our attention, you know, my colleague Vicky on our Clive to Carl Substack started responding to each of her points from an absolutely scientific basis, because almost everything she's saying is exactly the opposite of what it really is. So I found over the years there are certain shills who are put out there, presumably funded by the pharmaceutical fuel industry, to diss natural products. And, you know, if you were a vicious criminal running a company, that's what you do. You'd say, oh, what they say about vitamin C is rubbish. You know, the fact that it's been known to fix this, that, and the other for decades, that it's all wrong. It was all a con. It's not true. You know, and that's how it works. The Medicine Girl, you know, how many followers has she got out of nowhere? How many have we got? Well, it's a hugely different number. But if anybody's interested and is in doubt as to could Medicine Girl not quite be telling the truth, go to the Clive to Carl Substack.
I know. Well, I read you did a very good defense, if that's the right word, of magnesium.
Yeah.
I think it was.
We've done magnesium iodine quite a few. She's attacked quite a few.
And the thing about magnesium, remind me why it's good to take magnesium.
Well, the first thing is to understand what magnesium does for us. It allows relaxation. So it's not just mental relaxation, not just muscular relaxation, but it's relaxation for the heart, the bowels, you name it. So if we were living a normal life, what stresses would we have? Well, we might have a cold winter, we might have a lion about to eat us for lunch or something, but in a lot of cases, the stress would be very short term. We run away from the wolf, we're okay, now we recover. But actually, how are we, most people in the world? Most of us are very stressed from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to sleep. So most of us don't have enough magnesium because we've literally burnt through it. So if you burn through your magnesium levels completely, then what happens is you get a number of symptoms, and most people will probably recognize one of them at least. So symptoms of magnesium deficiency could be headaches, migraines, epilepsy, could be anxiety, worry, panic attacks, could be constipation, could be heart attacks, could be heart arrhythmia, where your heart just races and is uneven, could be twitches, could be cramps, from menstrual cramps to muscle cramps when you stretch in the morning, could be restless leg. There are a host of issues that is magnesium deficiency. So if I could only recommend one supplement, it would be magnesium.
And why do we not get it in our diets and stuff?
Because modern farming generally depletes every nutrient that used to be in the soil.
Right.
And we've also changed varieties. I mean, you know, we think of broccoli and we think of this big head of broccoli. 100 years ago, if you thought of broccoli, it would have been spindly little things. Yeah. Nothing is like it was a short time ago. They've hybridized stuff. So, you know, in a potato, you used to get, let's say, 90 milligrams of zinc. Now, in a lot of potatoes, you might get 9 or less.
Really?
From 90 to 9, yeah.
What about organic potatoes?
Well, again, you know, I 30 years ago, I had an organic farm, and our land had never had pesticides or herbicides ever. But let's say you want to go to a big supermarket, buy their organic. How many years ago was that soil depleted with chemical farming, and how long does it take to recover it? So my farm was in Spain. We went for the organic certificate. They came around, tested the soil, said, you're fine. I said, well, what if we weren't fine? Let's say this had been a lead factory, a mercury factory before.
Yeah.
You know, how long would it take then? Would you ever pass it? Does it take 1 year, 5 years, 5,000 years, 50,000 years? How long does it take for the soil to recover? And they said, oh, after 5 years, we pass everybody.
Oh, dear.
I mean, obviously, it's unlikely farmers are going to choose some ghastly site.
Yeah, yeah.
But nevertheless, all you've got to do is put enough herbicides and pesticides and fungicides and so on soil, then the fungus is dead, the mycelial net that spreads out and connects everything together, the trees with the mushrooms to everything, that's gone. Then the insects have gone, so the birds are partially gone. The soil is essentially dead. And, you know, I mean, I could carry on because it gets much worse than that. Modern farming has decimated food. And, you know, I grow some of my own food here, but it's not easy growing food in England. I mean,
it really isn't.
It isn't.
I mean, I was okay with my potatoes and my tomatoes, but that was
you find out what works well in your area, basically. I planted broccoli, which I've done every year for the last 10 years. Within 36 hours, woof, the insects had it all again. Some of it survived.
Brassicas are famously difficult.
Well, yeah.
You've got to net them.
I should have had a net, and I knew that, but I just forgot to do it.
But also, I said this before to you, I think, because everyone knows it who tries growing their own vegetables, it changes from year to year. You can have a really good carrot year, and the next can be absolutely...
Yeah.
There's, I mean, some things I think do work, like beetroot is fairly...
Yeah, that's pretty easy. I have no problem with beetroot.
But man cannot live on
beetroot. No, definitely not. No.
Alone. So, I always feel I've got a bottle of your iodine, Lugol's iodine, and I know iodine's really important, but I more often than not I forget to take it.
Mm-hmm.
So am I, what's the deal? Am I going to be
okay? One of the things that people notice when they start taking iodine is they remember to take iodine because yeah. I mean, let's start from a baby. If a mother is low on iodine, the baby will be born with a low IQ. This is absolutely known. Iodine's been around for 180 years or something. Here, Professor Lugol, who's made your version, 180 years ago, something like that. So the doctors know that if a woman is absolutely critically low on iodine, the child will not have a low IQ, there'll be a cretin. Cretin is a doctor's word, cretinism. And so if you want your baby to have a high IQ, should you make sure that mum has sufficient iodine? Not too much, sufficient to ensure that your baby has the highest IQ possible. Seems like a good idea. But that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
With adults, you know, ask yourself the question, compared to 10 years ago, am I as sharp as I was 10 years ago? Now, if the answer is not quite, I've got brain fog, you're low on iodine. So why are you low on iodine? Because you're probably in contact with chlorine. So if you have a bath in chlorinated water, it's a hot bath, your pores of your skin open right up and the chlorine goes right in, displacing, so the chlorine goes in, the iodine now is displaced, and now you've got chlorine for your hormonal structure, not iodine.
I knew this, Clive, because you said it before, and I knew it for a while, and then I...
Lack of iodine.
Like baths. I put Epsom salts in my bath, but I forget to put the teaspoon of vitamin C to undo chlorine. The chlorine.
Yeah, I mean, before I run a bath, I put the plug in, put a teaspoonful or two of vitamin C powder in there, then run the bath. No smell of chlorine. Knocks it out. If you've got fluoride in the water, you want to buy some borax. Genuine borax.
It's quite hard getting hold of borax.
No, it's dead easy if you're a scientist. Right, you buy it from a health perspective, you can't buy it. If you happen to be a scientist, like everybody is, a five-year-old is a scientist, you can buy it as a scientific supply.
How do you do that?
You go online and buy it.
Okay, fine.
Kilo of borax.
Okay, fine. So thanks for the reminder. I'm sure I'm not the only person who's reminding that iodine is kind of... Well, yeah.
Can we talk more about iodine?
Yes, please. Yeah, do.
So, I mean, when you go, if you're unlucky enough to go to a surgeon for an operation, the first thing they do is they take a paintbrush, slap iodine all over where they're going to cut, because fungus and bacteria can't get past iodine. So what if you take it internally as a drink? You know, you put a few drops in a glass of water and drink it. Now, what's going to happen? Well, it's going to have antibacterial, antifungal effects, but what's it going to do to your thyroid? Well, it's going to knock out the chlorine and the fluoride that might have got in there, if you like, by a mistake. What if you went to a swimming pool, swim in some really concentrated chlorine? You want to take iodine before you get in and after you've got out, because you have to correct that poisoning. You know, First World War, iodine was a poison gas, killed millions of people, and we're meant to breathe it in the shower.
You mean chlorine, not iodine?
Sorry, chlorine. Yeah, my apologies. Chlorine. Yeah. Chlorine is the bad one.
Mm.
So you can get shower filters which filter out chlorine. I had a guy maybe 15 years ago who had eczema only on top of his head. And I thought, buy a shower filter. 6 days later, rings me up after he's fitted the shower. It was the water. The eczema or whatever it was had gone. It was the water hitting his head in the same place every day, and his skin didn't like it. What about his brain? Yeah.
Well, so how sensitive are we? Because we're drinking filtered or distilled water now.
This is spring water.
Okay, fine. I
collected from the spring.
Really?
5 minutes up the road. If anybody needs to know where is there a safe spring, there is a website called findaspring.org. So I put in findaspring.org when I moved here. There's one up 5 minutes up the road.
My dad who's 91, gets his water from the Malvern springs.
Yep.
And he had a terrible injury the other day trying to lift up his water supply and put his back out.
Oh.
He's over that. But my brother uses it, Dick uses it as well, the spring. But he did say that one time he was getting his water and something like a dead mouse or something came out.
Right, okay.
But I suppose that's occupational hazard with them.
I can't quite see how the dead mouse would have got into the system, so to speak.
Well,
this is a vague memory. I've occasionally seen little wiggly insects.
Have you?
Yeah, if you leave, let's say you left it in the sun, there will be, in spring water, little wriggly things happening after a while.
Okay, but the question I was working around to was, okay, so I try and not drink tap water shit wherever I can. But occasionally, if you go around to somebody's house and they're not water literate, or if you go to a pub and you don't want to buy the bottled water, or all sorts of ways, how bad is it to drink, to lapse? I mean, you know, to not drink. How bad is it to drink tap water?
Well, it really depends on where your water comes from. You can ring up the water supplier and say, tell me, where does it come from? Is it recycled sewage or not?
Right, Southwest Water apparently are really good on pumping sewage into the sea around Salcombe. I've been told, which is great. I mean, I like swimming in South Devon, and it's good to know that an Australian owned company, it's like, oh mate, not going to affect us.
Okay, so I mean, at the sewage works, they separate the solids from the liquids. They can't filter out the pharmaceutical drugs. They'd like to, but they can't. You know, so how many parts per billion do you need of the most popular drug that gets in the water supply, the birth control pill? How much of that do you need before it feminizes men and women can't get pregnant anymore? How long does that take? So each time through the sewage works, if they are unable to take out the pharmaceuticals, presumably the water's getting worse and worse and worse. So people are wondering, you know, why are people sexually confused? Well, there is, let's say they drink water not from the tap now, they drink it from a plastic water bottle. Now, plastic water bottles take maybe a couple of months to set. You know, they blow the bottle from a little slug of plastic, whoomp, but it's not ready yet. It's still off-gassing. The chemical process of blowing the bottle hasn't completed. But they can't have a mountain of bottles, so they fill them when they're not ready. Now, what happens is there are artificial estrogens in the plastic bottles. So now on top of the recycled tap water that, okay, you're not drinking the tap water anymore, but if you're bathing it without filtering it, you're still getting it straight into the bloodstream through your skin. So people are being feminized by drinking water out of fresh plastic water bottles. Let's say you've got a plastic water bottle that you bought 2 months ago, that will now have set and you could refill it with your own filtered tap water or spring water and it should have finished off gassing.
Oh, okay.
So I generally, if I'm traveling, I've got glass bottles. You know, I put my spring water in glass because I don't want to be near any more plastics than I have to be, he says, sitting on a plastic imitation chair.
I thought it was natural wicker.
No, I don't believe so. I think it's fact.
I can tell it's horrible tack.
Comfy, though.
Very comfortable. Vitamins.
Can I talk more about iodine?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I haven't realized you have exhausted it.
Yeah. So iodine is so important. So the people who eat the most iodine in the world are the Japanese.
Yeah.
Because seaweed is full of iodine. Now, iodine evaporates. So dried seaweed, most of the iodine will have evaporated away. But when you eat fresh seaweed, all the iodine is there. So Japanese women very seldom get breast cancer compared to Western women because the second most common place for iodine to gather in women is in the breasts. The first in men and women is the thyroid. Now, up until recently, there was no word in the Japanese language for menopause because the Japanese women didn't get menopause symptoms like hot flushes or that sort of thing because they had so much iodine. You know, why did you get a hot flush? Well, your thyroid controls temperature control. So if you haven't got enough iodine to run your thyroid properly, your temperature's out of control. You might have cold hands and feet. Oh, your hands are cold. You wear socks in bed. Or, bloody hell, you're hot. You're roasting. You know, like menopausal women go through hot flushes. Iodine deficiency. So if you've got brain fog, if you've got dry skin, you've got dry skin on your elbows in particular, if you have hormonal problems, you know, your hormones are basically made of iodine and cholesterol. So if you're on statins, you've got low cholesterol, and you're in contact with fluoride or chlorine, well, good luck.
Okay. I think you've talked me into
iodine. But the thing is, because it lifts brain fog, it stops forgetfulness.
Okay.
Now, if I'm tired, but I realize, actually, I'm not as sharp as I want to be, I usually put 10 drops of iodine in a glass of water and drink it. But I also take selenium on the same day as iodine. Selenium and iodine go together. Absolutely go together.
Right. Okay. Vitamins. You've read the essays by Medicine Girl and or Agent.
Well, I haven't come across Agent.
I think it's the same.
I read the first Medicine Girl thing, and then I got the point. I haven't bothered to read the others. Vicky, who's been writing the articles, she's obviously read them all. Okay.
So he goes into great detail about the horrible toxic sludge that goes in vats, and then they turn it into vitamins.
Well, I don't know. Probably, as an outsider, if you went to one of these plants where they make the vitamins, there probably is horrible sludge. I mean, I take fermented cod liver oil, for instance. Now, if you went into a fermented cod liver oil factory, it might smell a bit fishy. It might look horrible fermenting fish, right?
Yeah.
It might look awful, smell awful, but do I care? If you see what I mean? I mean, that's the more natural way to do things. I mean, everybody, you know, in Scandinavia, to get through a cold winter, got their vitamin D from fermenting fish. It would keep throughout the winter. It was an essential food. If you were up north and there wasn't enough sunshine, how else would you get your vitamin D? Stay healthy. But vitamin C, for instance, you can make it from different things. It's usually plants. It could be corn. There are various materials that you can make vitamin C from. And I'm sure, I've never studied actually quite how they extract it, but it might involve heating, no idea. However, you could choose genetically modified corn or organic corn to make your products with. And so that's where the distinction between a company that does their very best to provide the best and the healthiest and the least poisoned, and the others.
Yeah.
Global warming is a massive con. There is no evidence whatsoever that man-made climate change is a problem, that it's going to kill us, that we need to amend our lifestyle in order to deal with it. It's a non-existent problem. But how do you explain this stuff to your normie friends? Well, I've just brought out the revised edition of my 2012 classic book, Watermelons, which captures the story of how some really nasty people decided to invent the global warming scare in order to fleece you, to take away your freedoms, to take away your land. It's a shocking story. I wrote it, as I say, in 2011, actually, the first edition came out. And it's a snapshot of a particular era, the era when the people behind the climate change scam got caught red-handed, tinkering with the data, torturing till it screamed, in a scandal that I helped christen ClimateGate. So I give you the background to the skullduggery that went on in these seats of learning where these supposed experts were informing us, we've got to act now. I rumbled their scam. I then asked the question, okay, if it is a scam, who's doing this and why? It's a good story. I've kept the original book pretty much as is, but I've written two new chapters, one at the beginning and one at the end, explaining how it's even worse than we thought. I think it still stands up. I think it's a good read. Obviously I'm biased, but I'd recommend it. You can buy it from jamesdellingpole.co.uk/shop. You'll probably find that. Just go to my website and look for it, jamesdellingpole.co.uk. And I hope it helps keep you informed and gives you the material you need to bring round all those people who are still persuaded that, oh, it's a disaster, we must amend our ways and appease the gods, appease Mother Gaia. No, we don't. It's a scam.
I asked you about, I can't remember where I read it, but castor oil, if you put it on your eyelids,
yep,
it gets rid of cataracts.
Well, I'm using castor oil mixed with 20% DMSO and rubbing it on my eyelids. I was putting it in as eye drops, but I don't terribly like eye drops of something oily put in my eyes. They're not that bad or anything. But now I'm also trying to rub it on my eyelids and let it go right through. Add DMSO to it and it just penetrates.
Yeah. Okay.
You could do it first thing in the morning, last thing at night. Not long enough, and I'm not consistent on that one.
Yeah. Because I've been doing it on the dog.
Yeah.
I'm quite surprised, actually, that the dog... I mean, animals hate having medicines put on them. But the dog who normally really complains seems to take it, almost as though she knows on some level that maybe... I don't know, how is an animal...
It could be the dog picking up on your perceptions of stuff. I mean, did you ever watch... There was a program years ago on BBC Two of dogs who would come to the door when their master was coming home. And it was Rupert Sheldrake.
I was going to say Rupert Sheldrake, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If anybody hasn't seen it, he chose workers who never knew what time they were going to finish work. So it wasn't that the dog knew it, 5:30.
Yeah.
And the moment the guys or women would get up out of their desk to go home at some random time, the dog would immediately trot to the door. Right, absolutely.
Well, the dog's...
He's stopped work now.
He's being a bit previous, though, isn't he? So it's when they leave their desk rather than when they're about to turn up.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was the point. It was when they decided in the office to decide to go home, or was told they were going, that then the dog knew then, at a distance, didn't hear the noise of the car or anything like that.
And you also said... the reason dogs get cataracts is because of their biscuits?
Well, you know, cataracts are usually formed if somebody's eating too many processed foods and too much sugar. You know, processed foods, particularly the carbs, obviously, turn to sugar. So it can build up a sort of glycation there, which can get cloudy and hard to see through. So if I owned a dog or a cat, I wouldn't be feeding them biscuits. You know, the thing is, dogs and cats in the wild, how do they normally live? Well, they have a barbecue and cook some meat. They grind some wheat and make biscuits. No, they don't. They eat raw meat, raw birds, raw fish, if they can get it. I mean, you know, you're feeding cooked food to an animal that should not be eating at the very least biscuits. The biscuits are going to mess up their body. Years ago, I had a cat who was ill, and I took it to the vet. And the vet said, it's a kidney problem. You're feeding it whatever brand it was, Kitty Cat Whiskers, whatever. I said, how do you know? He said, oh, well, every cat food will kill the cat in a different way.
Really?
Yeah, because one is so bad it affects the kidneys, one is so bad it affects the liver, one makes them diabetic. You know, he could tell which food his patients, clients, were giving their cats. Anyway, he gave me some pills for the cat. And the cat suddenly got incredibly affectionate, just ridiculously over-affectionate.
The ecstasy pills he was giving you.
Well, I went back to the vet and said how affectionate the cat had got. He said, I'm going to give some to the wife. I'm just going to check and make sure the camera's still rolling. Hopefully it will be. Yes, it is. Hooray.
Good. We've got to talk, obviously, about my latest injury.
Oh, yes.
My broken finger. So if anyone wants to look at the squeamish should look away now. But if anyone wants to, there you can see a little hook coming out at the end. So I mentioned to you, I broke my finger on a horse on the neck strap or something, and I was very cavalier about it, and I took saunas and things, which you're not meant to do. I learned when you've got an inflammatory problem, because it just makes it worse. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. I do care, but I was yeah, I was doing my plank position and stuff, and amazingly, the fracture got worse. So I then had to have this operation to put a wire in, and the hook is so they can pull it out at the end.
So are you sure the hook isn't getting you ready for the amputation where you have a big hook?
You shouldn't mention that word, because right next door to the... It's called plastic surgery, which doesn't mean making yourself more beautiful. It means... or more hideous. It's something to do with the hand department.
Right.
Immediately next door to the plastic surgery is amputation.
God.
So so you sit in front of that sign every time you go in there for your checkup. But the bone wasn't mending, and I was taking homeopathic symphytum pills, and you said, "Nah, you should get."
I mean, there's nothing wrong with homeopathy.
Yeah.
But let's say you'd chosen a herb like comfrey, which the alternative name is a bone knit and bone set. You know, our ancestors had broken fingers. They knew how to fix it.
Yeah, they did.
And let's say you'd put that on day one. You know, who knows? The result might have been quite different. But it's not too late. You can still use comfrey. You can have it as tincture. You can have it as capsules. You can rub it in as a cream.
I'm gonna get some comfrey. I can't rub the cream on because my finger's covered with a splint.
Yes.
But yeah. Okay, so what else should I be doing for...
Well, because it's winter, vitamin D, so you could be doing what I do and take fermented cod liver oil, or you could be taking vitamin D capsules, or you could have a artificial sun, or you could go to Spain or something for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But vitamin K2, you know, your bones to knit your bones back together again from a calcium magnesium perspective, vitamin D and vitamin K2 in particular have that sort of bone knit effect. So anybody who's got any problem that ends with an osis, sclerosis, Any type of osis is low on K2, vitamin D, and particularly magnesium.
Endometriosis.
Well,
halitosis.
Good
Sorry,
point.
Love, I don't
no,
know
no, to very good point.
Put you off your
no, yeah, no, you did, but you might be right, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, an osis is generally a buildup of scar tissue. So halitosis doesn't seem to fit that at all. But that
does bring us back to the castor oil, which is really good at dissolving scar tissue.
Yeah, exactly.
If you, I'm planning on doing this actually, of maybe putting a kitchen glove with in the finger.
Yep. Yeah.
Some castor oil, that would work, wouldn't it?
Conceivably, yeah. Sounds
it's
perfectly
the problem
sensible.
With castor oil, it's a faff.
It's sticky. Sticky, messy.
Yeah.
But that would be a perfectly good way
anyway,
to do
sorry,
it.
Sorry, back to your osis.
No, but you're right. But fibrosis, fibroids, cysts, tumours, they can all be viewed as proteins that you don't want. So the K2 that I do a couple of different versions, but one of them is primarily natto kinase, which dissolves proteins. You want to take it at a time when you haven't just eaten protein. However, MSM sulfur, DMSO, which I mentioned, you know, I mix DMSO with castor oil because then it goes right into the skin, deep.
I meant to ask you the last time you mentioned it, and now I remembered. The problem with DMSO is it makes you smell like sour milk.
It does if you take it internally.
Ah.
But if you just rub it on, it doesn't seem to smell
so
bad.
Oh, okay.
If you have an IV, then you stink.
Because I get complaints from the wife.
Yes.
She knows instantly if I've been taking
DMSO. Yeah, no, it's not pleasant. The smell of it,
I can't smell it.
Well, no, you can't because you're taking it.
Right.
But, you know, after let's say you went into the room, now you've left the room, your wife walks in, she'll still smell it, that you were in the room.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
So
right.
If you use it for rubbing, it's okay then?
As far as I'm aware, yeah, I've never noticed anybody who's rubbed it and have the smell.
Right. Okay.
So they might. Maybe. I don't know, but I don't think so.
So, vitamin D and K2 and...
MSM sulfur is the same in a way as DMSO. DMSO is the pure liquid, and it has a lot of pain-relieving properties when you rub it in. You must rub it in with very clean hands, because whatever you're touching it with, if you just wash your hands with soap and you haven't rinsed them properly, then DMSO will drag the soap into the body.
So, I was thinking, actually, it might react with the titanium if I put it in.
You could look that up online and easily find that out. I doubt it.
All right.
I doubt it. But DMSO is an incredible material. Again, like everything, you need to learn how to use it, when to use it, why you want to use it. But, you know, if you don't specifically want a liquid to rub in, then taking MSM sulfur as a powder or capsules will do a very, very similar job.
Okay. My eczema is really bad at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then you already said hinted that maybe I should take some iodine. What else? Is a reaction to something else, isn't it?
Well, either it is something like the water that you're bathing in, or it could be just a mineral deficiency, so you're just not powerful enough to knock whatever's hitting you out. If you're not filtering all the water that you bathe in or shower in, and if you're a shower filter is easy, cheap and easy. Filtering the bath water is not so easy. However, there are two ways to heat your bath water. One is one of those little tanks, instant hot water. The other is a big storage tank. Now, if you've got a big storage tank, you're lucky. If you adjust the temperature so that you just use the hot tap only, the chlorine is generally neutralized by the calcium that tends to build up in a cylinder boiler.
Right.
So if you're lucky enough to have a cylinder boiler, if you change the water temperature from being really hot, half cold or something, to all the hot water coming out just at the temperature you like when you're on your bath, that will neutralize the chlorine to a large degree. But you can just put vitamin C in and it'll do the same.
I'll start doing that. But it's not like I've been changing my practice. It's only...
Maybe one day last week or whenever it came back, they put an extra dose of chlorine in the water. So they do shove it in. It's not a drip feed, usually. Today's the day we chuck it in.
We're talking about sort of patches that just get worse and worse and worse and worse over a period of months.
So have you tried taking some fulvic minerals, taking just a few neat drops and rubbing it in?
No.
Okay, we could try that.
Okay.
You know, your body could repair if it could. So if you're low on certain minerals, I mean, sulfur, MSM, DMSO, are about hair, skin and nails, amongst other things. Silica is about hair, skin and nails. Vitamin D, K2, iodine, all about skin. Selenium, all about skin. So if you haven't been doing the right quantities of iodine and selenium, just those two, you might have all sorts of dry skin issues.
I'm going to try. Ooh, but the sun's got warmer.
Yeah. That's good. Fulvic minerals, often you get a result just putting it in topically. But otherwise, what I do is I drink fulvic minerals every day in a big glass of water, squirt. But you could do both. An experiment. You could try iodine even, a little area, one drop of iodine, spread it on. Because let's say it's a fungal infection. Unlikely, but it could be. Say it's a bacterial infection. Unlikely, but it could be. Iodine, you'll observe it if it's one of those two, for instance. So easy experimentation, I would say.
These. Yeah. And what were the were those the ailments that I think they were. I want to leave time to go on your machine thing.
Yes.
How long have we done?
I think we're probably 40 minutes in or so, maybe more. No, I'm just going to have a look.
I'm going to have a look.
Minutes 27 seconds.
Well, that's kind of
that wraps it up, doesn't
it? Yeah. Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Well, I think we should do these more often because we've only scratched the surface of a couple of tiny issues. So if you feel like doing more, bring some sunshine if you wouldn't mind.
I need some more ailments. I think I don't know. When I've got skin in the game, I know I'm selfish that way. When I've got skin in the game, I'm much more interested in the because it's a pressing concern to me.
Well, bring somebody who's open-minded who you'd like to be in better shape. We can shove them on the chair. Yeah. We can treat them with a tester device. We can give them some supplements, maybe.
I'm trying to think who I know that's really... my dad. We went to visit my aunt in hospital the other day because she's broken her hip.
Oh, dear.
And my dad sort of went down the rabbit hole during COVID. And has become militantly anti big farm.
Good. A convert.
We spent the whole time in this ward, in this cottage hospital, explaining to my aunt how she shouldn't take any of the vaccines they offered, shouldn't take any of the pills that they gave her. And I don't know what the nurses thought of it, but my dad has given up all his meds. Because he had a bad experience. They gave him some blood pressure pills, which went wrong and made him hallucinate. And he's outlived all his contemporaries because he's not taking these kill shots and kill pills.
So with your aunt, some people fall and they break their hip. Others, the hip breaks and then they fall.
Oh.
Now, if, let's say somebody has decided they want to supplement with calcium, that might be the reason their hip broke. They're probably low on magnesium. They're almost certainly low on K2. They're certainly low on vitamin D if they don't know about it. Most elderly people haven't woken up to some of these supplements yet. But there's actually no reason why a hip should break just because you fell over, right? there is a weakness in that hip. Why would there be a weakness? Well, deficiency of the raw materials that make hips.
I've suddenly thought who I could try and bring down, if I could persuade her. My mother. She'd be game, probably.
Well, she's got nothing to lose.
No, she hasn't. She hasn't. No, it's true. Good. Well, Clive, thank you. And tell people where they can get all this stuff.
Yeah, you can get it from my website, clivedecarle.com. clivedecarle.com. Then, for the time being anyway, we've got a second website, which is secrethealthclub.com. And shortly, we may be forced to take it offline because of government regulations. And we've preempted this. We've had USB sticks made with all the information, you know, the hundreds of videos. We've made it interactive, so if you happen to, say, the internet went down briefly for a time, you can just, if you've got a battery-powered computer, you can just plug the USB stick and you've got access to how to get health from whatever situation you're in. It's a fairly comprehensive A to Z of useful stuff. Not too much, so you're swamped, but some really useful stuff. And so, yeah, secrethealthclub.com, clivedecarle.com.
I do find it quite... Because I'm a kind of instant fix type person, and I don't like... I never read the instructions, but for anything. I just want to kind of buy the pill, take it, and actually... If there's one lesson I've learned since I went down the natural health rabbit hole, is that you need to, I hate to use the word holistically, but you need to think about your situation holistically. You need to, with the parasite cleanse, for example, you need to get the pathways cleared before you do them. You can't just go, but I want to take it now, because that will jeopardize your...
And it might be unpleasant, whereas you don't want it to be unpleasant, you just want it to be gentle. Yeah, you hardly notice any discomfort. I mean, I don't, you know, do any of us want to experience discomfort? No. So if you do get it wrong, take too much without no knowledge, you might feel, oh, bloody awful. You know, feel flu symptoms might come on, you know. I mean, let's say that you've had a metal filling in your mouth from when you were younger and there's mercury stuck in your body. Now, if you got all that mercury out at once into your bloodstream, that might feel very unpleasant.
Yeah.
And then, if you haven't got the facility to actually get it out in some way, it might go back in where it started. And with one atom of mercury, if it meets one human cell, it will kill it. It will then go on to the next human cell and kill that one. And maybe in 25,000 years, it will have burnt itself out. But in your lifetime, unless you get the mercury out, it's still doing damage little by little. As is the other poisons.
That's annoying, isn't it?
It is annoying, but it's relatively easy to deal with. You know, simple things can deal... I mean, vitamin C, for instance, can be very good for certain toxins, fulvic minerals for other toxins, like glyphosate, the herbicide. You know, each supplement, and possibly sometimes the supplements in combination, can deal with whatever problem you're facing. We're just about to launch... 20 specific detox products for different things. And let's say you have an MRI. Now, if you're unlucky, they might say, well, we're giving you an MRI, we want to see clearly what's happening, so we're going to inject you with a contrast agent, usually called gadolinium, so the problems will show up nice and clearly in the pictures, right? Now, gadolinium, but another way, gadolinium poisoning can be very dodgy for some people. Loads of people might be fine with it, but others might be suffering from this, that, the other, and not know that.
You've got the antidote for that?
We've got about 20 antidotes for 20 different things, essentially.
That is such a good idea. Yeah. Why did you almost forgot to mention it.
Well, we're not ready yet, actually. Yeah, I've made all all the videos are made from it, but we haven't quite yet put it on the web. We're doing a new website.
But just give me a sneak. Okay, so gadolinium. What are other?
Okay,
barium enema. Barium meal.
There will be something for that. I don't know which of the 20 products it would be offhand.
Or what about? I had to have when I had my arm frozen for this operation. and they put a cannula in the other arm, and the anaesthetist said, and now I'm going to give you some antibiotics. And I said, I don't want intravenous antibiotics. You'll kill all my flora. And he said, well, that, it is the practice. We don't want you to get an MRSA. And I said, yeah, but he said, well, perhaps you can speak to the surgeon about it. So I turned to the surgeon and he said, no, you're not going to not have your... So what? How do I counter that? How long will it take me to recover my gut flora?
Well, let's be optimistic. Let's say that you went pretty hard on fermented foods. I'd start with the fermented cod liver oil because that has so many other benefits. Then you could be drinking organic kefir, or you could be having kimchi. I mean, so long as it's alive, unpasteurized, raw, that's going to help at the top part of the gut. I mean, for instance, yogurt and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
However, if you want to recover the flora that you were born with, that you got from mum and mum got from granny and all the way back down in time, now, assuming you were born naturally rather than cesarean, you would have picked that up, you know, in your passage through. And what's more useful? Is it the bacteria from yogurt, or is it to try and rekindle the bacteria that you got from mum?
Yeah.
Now, yogurt's great. All those things are great. But in the lower gut, where a lot of these bacteria are, what they like to eat are oligosaccharides. And oligosaccharides are types of sugars. And they reckon that in earlier times, we probably might have eaten more tubers, which would have been full of oligosaccharides. Anyway, some people notice it in one day, that suddenly they notice something's happened because their own bacteria is beginning to come back to life.
Right.
The product we do that's called Panaceum. We've had that one for a couple of years now. And some people notice nothing. Some people are amazed at how they feel.
Right.
Because to get that gut bacteria that you were meant to have, makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Did I do the right thing? Well, I couldn't really say no, could I?
Well, you could have got up and left, but that may not have seemed the right thing to do either. So, I mean, it is what it is. You can't change the past. So I would be eating foods that would help my gut, the gut bacteria in particular. And, if you want to make your own fermented vegetables, it's so easy. So easy. We can talk another time about how to do it.
Right.
But I've made videos about it, and
have you?
Thousands of other people have. It's incredibly easy.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. If you spent 10 minutes, you could have a jar of pickled vegetables this big.
Oh, really?
Well, let me explain what you do.
Yeah, go on.
You got a kiln jar, depending on what size you want to make. When I started getting sort of 2-litre kiln jars. And what you do is you chop up whatever the vegetable is you want to ferment. Now, the smaller you chop it, the faster it'll ferment. The bigger the chunks, the slower. So the classic recipe for sauerkraut is cabbage, either white or red cabbage, maybe some onion, a bit of chili, a bit of garlic, if you want, whatever flavor you might want to put with it. And you crush it down into the jar, pack it as tightly as possible. Then you want to put some salt on. You're going to be eating it, so you want the right amount of salt that is tastes nice, right? Then if you rammed it right down, you fill it up with water, but you want as little water, well, let's say just fill it up with water, and you want it has to be over the top of the cabbage.
Yeah.
Any bits that stick up will go moldy.
Yeah.
That's fine, just pick those off. What most people do, they take the old cabbage leaf on the outside and put that down at the top so that goes moldy. It's the sacrificial bit.
Yeah.
You're forcing everything else under the water. Then you close it up and you put it in a dark place. Then you might want to visit it every day, see how it's doing, and you just open it. And probably by day one or day two or day three, it'll go pop as it opens because the pressure of the fermentation is happening. Now, one of the very first times I ever did it, I did beetroot and red cabbage, right? But I forgot about it. And about 10 days later, I opened it. It didn't go pop. It went bam! Ceiling, wall, me. Right? So best to open it every now and then just to make sure that it isn't. But it's dead easy. And after about 6 or 7 days, you'll probably find it's nice. I mean, if you like pickled onions, most people think that how you make pickled onions is you put some onions in a jar, pour vinegar on them, let them sit. That is not how you make pickled onions. You get the onions, put them in a jar, put in some salt to taste, put in water, close it up, come back, depending on the size of the onion, a few days, a week or two, pickled onions.
I did not know that.
This is how vinegar is made. Like, take grapes. You go through the wine stage, now it becomes vinegar. So any fruit, any vegetable that you add, with wine it's sugar and water, but the savoury ones, salt and water, it will ferment.
You wouldn't want pickled
onions,
raspberries or strawberries.
You might not, but you might want pickled cucumber, pickled tomatoes.
You would want pickled cucumbers, definitely.
Yeah, so I mean, tomatoes technically a fruit. But, I mean, look at Mexican food where they give you chopped up onions, peppers, tomatoes, bit of garlic or whatever, salsa. And all that is, it'll probably be about 4 days old or 5 days old. It'll be all the chopped vegetables, put in water and salt, and that comes out vinegary. So it's done.
That's okay. Well, thank you for that. Actually, you've made me want to make some pickled vegetables. So thanks. Okay. Well, I think that's it. Now I can go for my treatment. The machine.
Exactly. Good.
Thank you, everyone. And go to Clive's site, and fill your boots. Thanks very much for listening. Bye bye.
Perfect. All right. So.